now we're a bit of a dictator. And even though your presentation has been very interesting, we must remind all the speakers that only 15 minutes have been allotted for each presentation. To continue our working session, and according to the proceedings, we give the floor to Rafael Lopez Valdez, anthropologist, researcher of the Center of Archaeology of the Academy of Science of Cuba, and specialist in the study of African roots in Cuba. He has made studies, field studies in Cuba and in Africa and Angola. He is the author of several papers in his specialization. He will deliver a paper on the past, present, and the future of the religions of African origin in Cuba. The slave trade in the Americas has been the most gigantic and brutal diaspora force to the history of humanity. Its consequences for Africa, especially in the losses of human lives and the monstrous distortion introduced into societies. The slave trade in the Americas has been the most gigantic and brutal diaspora force to the history of humanity. Its consequences for Africa, especially in the losses of human lives and the monstrous distortion introduced into societies, explain the global underdevelopment of the continent. According to conservative estimates, from 15 to 20 million Africans were disembarked in the New World. These figures make us think that the general human losses around these 400 years must have been around 100 million human beings that perished in the struggles among peoples promoted by the only beneficiaries, the slave traders, abandoning cultures, forcing them to hunger, at the decrease of birth rate and diseases that were strengthened by malnutrition and the losses in the so-called Middle Passage. Many of the contemporary sources and present-day papers, like those of Herbert Klein, describe the horrors of the Middle Passage. After long weeks chained to one another in the middle floors built for the transportation of this human cargo, without any space or possibilities for even sitting down, with hardly any ventilation at all, in terrible sanitary conditions, only those that had more attitudes physically and mentally would survive. In these conditions, nothing material were they able to bring with them. Cruelly uprooted from their societies, torn away from the tangible world of their families, of their communities, of their daily occupations, they brought with themselves the richness of their spiritual values. Only in terms of spiritual values can one explain the survival of the African man from the very moment of the violent rupture with their societies to their involuntary implanting in the colonial slave societies of the Americas. Within the spiritual world, religion played a fundamental role as an echo, magnified and at the same time different of that which they had in Africa. In African societies, religion is present in all spheres of life, in its own functioning, within the family, in relations among relatives, in their daily lives, in the expressions of their material doings. Between 1521 and the 1870s, around 1.3 billion African men, women, and children arrived. From the very beginning of the African slavery, we can find references of two religious institutions among Africans and Cubans: the closed societies called cofradías and the city councils, that from the very beginning they shared an ethnic taxonomy but had differences in their cultural and social projections. From the ethnic point of view, the Spanish slavist pattern, different from the British and the French, was based in the ethnic heterogeneity at the level of plantation or economic exploitation. In this way, the slavist policy of the Spanish was based on the fragmenting of the Africans, and this was the same policy that was followed with the slaves as well as with the black, the free blacks. From the 16th century, in Cuba, a social strata of free blacks was formed based on a royal order dictated in 1526 that allowed the slaves to buy their liberty. According to an old practice followed with the Africans in the southern areas of Spain, in Cuba, the formation of close societies of Africans was stimulated, associated to the Catholic Church under the patronage of a saint with a Catholic priest as a chaplain. For a long time, the close societies served to promote the assimilation of the Catholic religion by the African, and little by little, they lost their ethnic physiognomy, opening themselves to the participation of the Creole, mulattoes, and blacks that predominated within them. Their character of institutions for assimilation, for the social promotion, was frustrated from 1844 onward, when the colonial authority, based on a so-called conspiration, drowned in blood the existence of an increasing petite bourgeoisie integrated by blacks and free mulattoes. From then, closed societies assumed the character of an organization of artisans as the embryo of the future guilds that would be formed at the end of the 19th century. When with this character of guilds, members of different closed societies would have a very active participation in the struggle for a national liberation that began in 1868. As to the city councils, they constituted an institution formed outside official initiatives. Their main objective was mutual aid among its members. All free Africans of the same ethnic affiliation and extensive to slaves that with their help were able to buy their liberty. At the beginning, in the 16th century, colonial authorities tried to repress these city councils, trying to prevent their constitution. Afterwards, they changed their policy, closely observing the functioning of these city councils and, above all, strengthening their ethnic character. In this way, they tried to prevent the participation of the Creole, blacks, and mulattoes among the members of the city councils and their participation together with the whites in the activities of these councils. It is clear that the unity of the humble and the exploited have always had a very dangerously subversive character for the ruling classes, and they have always promoted division. And this policy of division was also followed in Cuba, among other reasons, because in this country, the interbreeding has been very intense since the 16th century, to the fact that today, among the 70 or the 80% of Cubans all have some proportion of black blood. And color has always had an economic, ideological, and cultural value. And when I say value, I am not referring to an axiological meaning, but a real economic meaning, because in 1795, a royal order was dictated, making it possible that mulattoes with money could become whites by birth, just by paying taxes to the royal crown. The city councils offered a Catholic appearance with the expressing a formal syncretism that identified saints and virgins of the church with African gods. The participation in the life of these city councils of blacks and mulattoes, and even whites, humble whites, as well as the interaction of the Africans that had local variants of the same religious affiliation, conditioned the integration of old and new ritual elements and its own recreation. Towards the end of the 19th century, the city councils opened their doors even wider to the participation of the Creoles, and progressively they lost their essence of being institutions integrated by Africans. In this way, its definite decline took place, being replaced gradually by the proliferation of temple homes for religious practices. It is in these city councils during the colonial period where we find an expression of cultural subversive resistance, of resistance to their own religious values. In the face of a ruling culture that tried to emphasize its Hispanic roots, in the face of an ideology of institutionalized racism, in the face of a church that tried uselessly to embed in the slaves the words of the Gospel of St. Paul, "Slaves, you must obey your earthly masters with the same humbleness which with you would obey Christ." The city councils were centers of African roots that nurtured a popular culture of resistance that was first Creole and afterwards was frankly Cuban. In the face of the church of the obedience to the masters, the city councils, through their gods, taught a religion that expressed the aspirations for a better life on earth and not after death. During the new colonial republic, religions of African origin were an integral part of the culture of resistance of the humble against a continuity of the ruling culture of Hispanic roots and against the Catholic creed, which was nurtured by a cultural and ideological penetration from the United States. The ideology of the exploiters uselessly tried to hide the African roots that were present in every stage of the development of the Cuban people, trying to deny the African contribution to the Cuban culture and to the formation of the nationality. In that period, they stubbornly denied the capacity of the peoples, of the African peoples, to have their own history and civilizations. In Cuba, the same as in the Black Americas, religions of African origin form part of the resistance culture of the humble against the official ruling culture, be it Catholic or Protestant. This did not mean that, per se, they conducted us towards a religious war, with the exception of the uprising of the Malay blacks, Muslims, of Brazil in the 19th century. But they were present in the rebelliousness, as we can see in the religious practices, the Buckman religious practices of the Cayman Bois of the Haitian Revolution, in the Palenques of the Cuban Mountains, and other regions of America, as they were also among those that fought in our independence wars the past century. There were leaders among the neocolonial republic, such as Aracelio Iglesias Black, who was a leader of the workers of the harbor, of the port, that was linked to the beliefs and religious practices of African origin. And as a communist, he struggled for the rights of the workers and was assassinated, just as Malcolm X was assassinated, not because of his religious beliefs, but because of the dimension, very subversive dimension, for the social establishment that ruled against his ideas and political struggle. The triumph of the revolution in 1959 brought about a real cataclysm for all society. For the first time in the history of Cuba, the ruling pyramid of ideas, of values, and of practices was inverted in the life of the country. No longer were the rich the ones who had the reason in their hands. All that that reminded us of an African origin was no longer considered backwardness. For the first time, the humble were heard and their needs were fulfilled. As citizens was full right. For the first time, the religions of African origin were no longer measured from a centrist Catholic dimension. The official ideology of racism expressed in the discrimination was replaced by new values based on fraternity and solidarity, on the unity of the exploited and the humble, on the values of the essence, Latin African essence in the Cuban people. The revolution has made possible to rescue the dignity and a history that is not of the slavists and exploiters, but that of the resistance and the struggle of the popular masses. And it is in this history in which you can find space for the religions of African origin. It is now that we have the official conditions to be able to appraise the ideological, social, and cultural role played by these religions along the history of the Cuban people. With respect to the future, there are already the premises within the social thought of the Cuban Revolution that allow the forecasting of the impact in the religious practices. It is a new approach of the Marxist-Leninist practice that stems from Cuban revolutionary practice. Milestones of this thinking we can find since the decade of the 70s in the speeches made by our Commander-in-Chief Fidel Castro during the visits made to Jamaica and Chile, in the interviews that he granted to the Brazilian priest Frei Beto, published in a book called Fidel and Religion in 1985, and in his recent visits to Venezuela and Brazil, and the meeting he held this year with representatives of the Ecumenic Council of the Christian Churches. Some of them are present here today. Within this context, we emphasize the commitment and social practice of the revolutionist and not in his philosophical conceptions, be it religious or atheist. And in this sense, I underline what has been expressed yesterday by our friend Fernando Martinez. This has special signification for the religions of African origin in Cuba and for the beliefs and practices that continue a recreation process today and that have received the influence of them. We're talking of new processes of religious syncretism that have to do with Santeria, Palomonte, and Spiritism in different regions of the country. And also, they have a very special signification because the believers have always been associated to political positions favorable to the revolution, because the revolution embodies the resistance and struggle of the humble, of the weak, against the powerful and the strong, the fight of David against Goliath. Its advocates, men and women of the people, have decisively participated in the work of the revolution. They have contributed with their sweat and their blood to the creation of a new society with new values of solidarity and internationalism. To end, I would like to quote the Cuban anthropologist Fernando Ortiz, who has the merit of having discovered for his contemporaries, and above all for posterity, the African roots of our people. When he defined Cuban nationality in terms of the will, the consciousness, and the roots of our country, stating that the Cuban essence stemmed from below and it didn't rain from above. And the essence of the Cuban nationality, we find that the religions of African origin, their religious influences, that is to say, the African efforts of the people and the culture of Cuba have had and always will have a very important place. Thank you very much. Thank you very much to Rafael López Valdés for his presentation.